welcome to Knowing Spirit, a show about healing the soul so you can change your life. This is Reverend Shree Storen inviting you to journey to all that is.
Hello, LaVon.
Hi.
Hi. I'm looking forward to today's show.
Yes, me too.
We have Yvonne Perry with us. She is the author of Right to Recover, Winning the Political and Religious Wars Over Stem Cell Research in America. Now, the reason I wanted Yvonne on the show is because I think there is a lot to learn about stem cell research, and most of us are only getting little snippets from the news. And I thought it would be really educational and interesting to get somebody who has done a lot of research on it so that we could have, or we could hear both sides of the story. Now, I don't know if you know much about it. I really don't know much about the stem cell research. So, and I do know that there's a spiritual component to this, like a religious spiritual component. So it's a bit of a touchy subject. So I'm really, with great honor, I say thank you, Yvonne Perry, for joining us. Hello, Yvonne.
Hi. Thank you for having me as your guest.
I was just speaking with LaVon about the research that you have done and why it is so important for us to be able to learn from someone like you who has spent the time actually digging deep into this issue. Mm-hmm. So if you could just give us, and I know you have the book Right to Recover is about this. So what is the premise of Right to Recover?
Okay, the premise is I wanted to provide an educational book that will shed light on the way Americans are presently viewing stem cell technology or biology, and also to give some well-researched facts about all types, whether it's bone marrow, amniotic fluid, cord blood, or what I call blastocystic. It's also been called embryonic, and I think we'll discuss the reason why that's probably not the best term to call it. But it also explores the research being done on these laboratory animals and shows findings to support curative potential in those animals and how that could possibly translate to some help for humans. Now, you mentioned the spiritual component. It does give some historical background about the influence that religion has upon science and politics, and I'm hoping that will appeal to some religious beliefs of those who are opposing blastocystic stem cell research. But also it does have a spiritual component in that when does life begin? What is life and how do we define that and just part of the cycle of life and birth? So I did kind of get into a metaphysical spiritual avenue in trying to, I don't want to say rebut, but lack of a better word, to kind of expose the popular belief that is coming from the right-wing party. And mm-hmm. try to maybe bring some logic and shed some light on that subject.
Okay, well, LaVon,
yes,
you've had a real long history with fundamental religions. And what do you think about what Yvonne just said about the spiritual component?
I guess, at least where I was at, I was really in a box, and it's almost like. I was just thinking about it just before we got on the program, how so many people like me or like what I used to be, it's like you don't realize there's so much wonderful things to learn out of your box,
mm-hmm.
but you get comfortable in that box, so, you know, mm-hmm. you just feel kind of safe. But I don't know anything about what you guys are talking about. I've heard the term, but, you know, what is it?
Well, that's why I had Yvonne on here. So if Yvonne, if you could just give us a bigger, you know, a background. Thank you, LaVon, for asking that question, because I have no idea either. That's why I should have.
Yeah. Well, why don't we just kind of start with some basics then and get everybody up on what is a stem cell? Well, a stem cell, they're located throughout the body, most of the body, not all places, but most of the body. And that is the way the body regenerates new cells. These stem cells that we are talking about are undifferentiated, meaning that they are undefined. They have the potential to become something, but they have not become it yet. Those that are in the bone marrow have the potential of becoming more hemiotopic cells, like kind. And those that are found in the brain, would also become more neural cells or brain cells. What we have in the in vitro process is a fresh slate of undifferentiated cells that could become any type of cell in the entire body. In fact, it could become an entire body if certain conditions are met. And I think that's probably where some of the misconception has come across, because we have people thinking that stem cell research and the leftover blastocysts in the in vitro process are actually embryos, that they are actually forming little fish-like embryos in the lab dish, and that is totally not true. What we have are just the clump of cells. There's about 32 cells in a clump of blastocysts, and that blastocyst could be introduced into the womb of a woman who is at the right time of her cycle, and at that point it could take on the form of an embryo once it has implanted itself into the uterine lining and becomes, through the stages of gestation, it could become a human being. However, without being implanted or without being introduced into the womb, it could never do anything except create more undifferentiated stem cells.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So what scientists are wanting to do is to direct those stem cells into becoming cells that the body does not regularly or easily reproduce, or that may be defective in a body, or that may be needing more of the same. So we're looking at ways of being able to produce new cells through these stem cells to help correct some maladies and conditions within the human body.
Okay, well, I think that we have, do we have a caller on the line to ask you some questions? Hello? Okay, they must, because I heard it beep. So I just wanted to put out there, if there are callers interested in speaking to Yvonne Perry, please don't hesitate to call in. Her book is about Right to Recover. We did have a caller that may have hung up. Okay, sorry, Yvonne.
Okay. Sure, no problem. Are we still there? No?
Hello?
Hi.
Hi. Sorry, no, I heard it beep, so sorry about that. I didn't know if there was somebody calling in to ask you a question. So it sounds like the confusion is almost about wording.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really...
It does have a lot to do with it, yeah.
So if we could just learn the vocab, then maybe this wouldn't
right.
be such a... You know, from my standpoint, when I watched the news, it just sounded like, you know, the stem cell research, you guys were, you know, these people were using, you know, real life and manipulating it, and it, you know, it almost sounded like cloning on some level.
Right. Yeah. And
so
there are two different types of cloning. We can talk about that, too, but you're right. It is the terminology that has caused quite a bit of the confusion. To a scientist, embryonic means that which grows, or that which is under 2 months past conception. And there's a huge difference in conception, which can only be accomplished within a human body or an animal body,
mm-hmm.
and fertilization, which can be created in a lab or in a woman's body. And I think the terms that the scientists have used as calling it embryonic has confused the layman, because when a person like you or I hears that term, we automatically get this mental image of the little fish-like embryo swimming around in the amniotic fluid inside of its mom, and that's just totally not what we're looking at with this research. It is not inside the body. It is totally outside the body.
Oh, okay. All right, so, Lavon, did you understand that?
Kind of.
Okay. Is there anything that because I'm glad you're with me, because we have all these, you know, we have a lot of questions to ask. So if there's anything
right.
that you know that you that you're not clear on, the most important thing, I think, is to take the confusion that a lot of us are dealing with,
mm-hmm.
you know, the lack of unknowingness, and move it to clarity. So if there's anything that you think that we could clarify, you know, Yvonne could clarify more, just so that we can have a greater understanding of this.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's just say a layperson was just listening, you know, and is not very much into the medicine terms and et cetera. Mm-hmm. Is there an easier way of, you know, describing this?
Of describing the science itself?
what you're doing.
Sure. Let me go back and kind of explain the in vitro process, because I'm thinking probably a lot of people are not aware of what actually occurs in that. And that was one thing that I wanted to address in the book and kind of give people a heads up, because if you've not gone through the process or known someone closely who has, it might be a totally new concept for you. So when an in vitro process occurs, the male has the easy part. He donates sperm through the traditional method, through natural causes. A woman, however, in order to get the egg cell from her ovary, has to be placed under anesthesia. A needle, a long needle, is inserted through the abdomen, or they can go in through the vagina, and they draw off these cells and bring them out to put them into a lab dish. That process costs about $15,000, and most insurance does not cover it. So we're looking at a very expensive as well as a risky medical procedure, because anytime you're put under anesthesia, there's some risk involved.
Okay.
So you want to get more than just one egg while you're in there. Let's get two or three eggs to make this process worthwhile, so that if the blastocyst doesn't implant the first time, or for some reason the mother doesn't carry full term, we still have two more eggs to work with. Now, these eggs don't really do that well to freeze separately from the sperm, so it's natural to go ahead and put them in proximity of one another where they will find themselves and do the fertilization thing. And at that point, they can be frozen and kept much more longer term, as well as more safely, in order to be able to still have a good specimen to work with when time comes. Now, the woman needs to wait then until her cycle comes around and the best time of the month for her cycle, so that she can have now introduced this blastocyst, which is just the egg and sperm that have been united. And once that egg and sperm begins is united, the beginning of cell division, we've learned about this in biology in school, cells begin to divide, which actually means they're multiplying, gets up to about 32 cells. That blastocyst at 32 cells contains an inner mass and an outer cluster that kind of goes in a circle around the inner mass. The inner mass has the potential to become an any cell in the entire body. However, the outer cells can only become the placenta. So scientists only want to work with those inner cells that haven't already received any kind of coding as to what they should become. So you take the entire blastocyst, you introduce it back into the uterus, and hopefully from there, that nature will take over. Science is done at that point. You can't do anything to make this happen. And
okay.
The
is that what you call like the in vitro fertile?
In vitro means outside the body. So they have taken the components from outside the mother and the father. They've taken an egg and a sperm, united it in the lab dish. Okay, still outside the body.
Okay.
We allow the cells to grow, and then they are placed back into the womb at the proper time in the cycle.
Okay.
From there, it's up to science. It's up to the mother's body if she is going to have what is needed to nurture that that blastocyst to the next stage. It's up to nature, and up to the little blastocyst itself in order to move itself around and get into a place where it can implant into the uterine wall and then begin the process of conception and pregnancy. You really don't have a pregnancy or conception until after that blastocyst has implanted in the uterine wall and began to draw nourishment from the mother. And in that nourishment is also the signal of what it's supposed to do next. Because remember, these cells are undifferentiated. They have total potential, but they don't know what to do with that potential unless the mother gives signals. And her body gives signals as to what is supposed to come next. Do I develop this? What's this cell going to be? Is this going to be a heart? Is this going to be a lung? The mother's body gives those signals.
Okay.
And then from that point on, you can test to see if the mother is actually pregnant by doing a level, or checking the level HCG in the body to confirm a pregnancy.
Hmm.
Now, if that didn't happen, if the pregnancy did not occur, you still have two more frozen spare blastocysts that you can work with at the next monthly cycle or later on down the road if the mother needs a grieving process or whatever to bring the next one, the next try. So that kind of explains in vitro process.
Okay.
So then the controversy comes as to what do we do? Suppose that mother did get pregnant the first time and from then on had no difficulty bearing children. Well, she doesn't really need to go through the the process of having the cells unfrozen and put into her body to see if it's going to take. Well, now you've got the leftovers. Okay, what do we do with them?
Okay, typically, so the leftovers.
Yeah, the leftovers. Here's where the problem comes in.
Okay.
Some people are saying that these leftover cells that have been frozen and in the freezer at the lab are equal to human life.
Okay.
And they think that because we are, the scientists now want to use these cells that are left over, they think that there's a moral controversy in that. But let me tell you what normally happens with the cells that are left over. There's good and bad in it. First of all, they can be used to implant in someone besides the mother. There could be a surrogate mother who can't have children. Maybe she doesn't have any eggs to contribute. Maybe her husband has no sperm to contribute. But by using the egg that's already fertilized, she could become a mother, and actually the mother of another person's DNA, the genetics of another person. But it's like adopting a child before it's actually a child. So you're adopting eggs and hoping that you will have children of your own. But if that is not, if that doesn't happen, the sad thing is those cells are destroyed. The leftover blastocysts many times are flushed down the drain or put in the trash can. And scientists are saying, oh, wait a minute, rather than throwing them away, couldn't we use those to find out what cures might be found, what treatments, what can we do to understand biology and cell development a little better rather than putting them in the trash, rather than just throwing them away. So for some reason people have gotten all up in arms about using the cells for research, but they're not really that upset that they're being thrown away, which is kind of ironic to me. One of the things about the research and the mentality behind the opposition that I really don't get.
Now, that, and then this is what you were, when you were writing in your book, is the purpose of the book to explain what is the actual process?
Yes, to give the education, the biology behind it. I work with researchers, with doctors, medical doctors who work with all types of stem cells, and I've also talked with politicians and with the people who are who understand religion a little better in that mindset. Even though I'm coming from a religious background, I still did not understand why they were saying that a life was being destroyed when really the life had not been created until it was actually in the womb. That to me was a little confusing as to why they thought that a life was being destroyed. They were equating it to abortion. And I'm thinking, no, abortion has to do with removing an embryo from the womb once it is underway, once the process is ongoing. But at this point, these cells have never been introduced into a woman. They came out of a woman, they came out of a male, and were united in the lab, but at that point, that all we have is cells. And they're saying that these cells are equivalent to human life or nascent life.
And they're and you know, in terms of vocab, they really aren't. So maybe a lot of our, you know, what I was saying before, our challenge is just the lingo, the terms that we use.
The semantics of it, exactly.
Now, an obvious question is, what can scientists, what have they discovered that they can do with these cells?
As far as the cells? Well, they've had a lot of progress already with adult stem cells. We've been using those for 30 years. And there are now 9 illnesses that can be safely treated, effectively treated, and cancer being one of those. 30 years ago, if you got a diagnosis of cancer, it's pretty much fatal. It was over. Now you can actually, if certain types of cancer can be treated with adult stem cells by taking out stem cells that are contained within the adult bone marrow, you would rev them up. There's a process involved in that, but to get higher quantity. And then you just freeze those cells until the person is finished going through the chemo or radiation treatment, and they are going through it at such high doses that normally the radiation would kill the stem cells in the bone marrow, and that person had a very high chance of rejection if they even survived the treatment. So by being able to use higher doses of radiation and chemotherapy, they are able to kill the cancer without killing the person, provided they can put back the stem cells into the person after the process is completed. So we're already seeing cures from adult stem cells. Now, because the blastocystic stem cell research is so new and it has not received the same as funding as adult stem cells, and because there has been such controversy hindering the forward progress of stem cell research on blastocysts, we haven't seen as much progress, and these blastocystic stem cells have not come to clinical human trials because of the opposition around them. However, they have used them with animals because the guidelines with animals is a little less stringent, of course, than using humans. And there has been some work done with scientists, mostly out of the U.S. because of the controversy here in the U.S. The Swiss are actually able now to make some heart valves, to actually grow heart valves from adult stem cells, from amniotic, from cord blood. Cord blood is another source. And they are also wanting now to use the blastocyst cells to see what they can do, what potential they have. And another thing, it's not just growing replacement parts that we feel that blastocystic research could benefit us, but also in understanding what causes a cell to go bad in the first place, what causes a cell to turn cancerous. And in knowing that, we might be able to come up with some kind of a cure or a treatment that would prevent the cells from ever doing that in the first place. So rather than curing cancer, we might be able to actually prevent it if we understood the biology behind how a cell decides what it's going to become and what signals are required for it to become that. And they're wanting to use these cells in their lab to just see what potential or what treatments might be found or derived from stem cell technology.
Well, this is, you know, this is fascinating. I would never have, I'm really glad that you're on the show, because these are some important concepts that I think most of us may have, you know, overlooked until uh-huh. you're in a situation where you do have contact with somebody who has cancer or another disease that can be,
mm-hmm.
you know, helped through this process.
Sure.
I know Levon, you have, you know, Levon works with a lot of people who have these type of illnesses. And what do you think, Levon, in terms of the clients that you have, what do you think about this type of research and how it might help your clients?
Well, I was just thinking of a particular lady. I should talk to her because she has leukemia, even though they say it's okay, but she still isn't producing her white blood cells properly yet.
Uh-huh.
So I was wondering, and she says something about her bone marrow, so I was thinking I should talk to her. You know, maybe I should get off the phone so other people can call in. Should I do that for a little bit?
Sure. I think that...
How about that? Because that way, because he said that because all three of us are talking, nobody can call in, and maybe people are trying to call in.
Oh.
So how about if I get off, and that way people can call in. Okay?
Sure, definitely.
Okay, and thank you, Levon.
Yeah,
talk to you later.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Hi, Yvonne. Hello? Hello? Hi, Yvonne.
Hi, yes, we're back.
I just want to say thanks to Levon for giving some callers a chance to call in. This is a controversial topic, so if we have any questions, you know, please don't hesitate to call and ask Yvonne any question, anything that we may not have covered. The toll-free number for the U.S. is 1-877-876-5227. And then for Canada is 1-888-815-9756. Okay, here's another question that I have.
Okay.
Spiritually just spiritually speaking, I think a lot of people may not be happy about manipulating in nature.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that there might be, a manipulation going on, and I think a lot of people might feel that's God's job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do you think about that thought that we might be stepping in and going too far?
Yeah, that's definitely something to consider, but I think the process would I think that question should be addressed in the in vitro process itself, because that is where the manipulation originates with these cells, is in taking the cells out of the body and uniting them in the lab and then reintroducing them to the body. So that has disrupted the natural process, or perhaps it has only replicated the natural process. By assisting, most people see it as assisting a natural process, not really as manipulating it or causing it to do something it wouldn't normally do anyway. It's the two, but the egg and the sperm are united, whether in the body or out of the body. It is a process of nature, and you're still going to have to depend on nature or God to do the magic once it's back inside the woman's body. There's no guarantee that it's going to become a pregnancy, that it's going to become an embryo once it implants. I mean, even nature itself, even what some people might call God, there is death and life in the process of just being on this planet. Things come and they go. Energy changes. We understand that energy can't really be destroyed, but it can be changed. So, and I think that's probably part of what the life and death process is. It's just an undergoing a change. So if these cells are placed into the womb and they decide that they will follow through and follow the natural path of gestation, we'll have a baby in 9 months. If not, these cells are just going to die, just like anything else in nature. A plant or an animal would die. In fact, many women lose fertilized eggs, which are fertilized in their body without the in vitro process, without ever even knowing that they had such inside of them. So it's just flushed out with a menstrual cycle or by some other means. But it's just a part of life itself that some cells make it, some don't. Some people live a long life, some people live a short life. So I think that process we still have no control over. There's no way to manipulate it.
Well, here's another thought. What is the legislation that's against this? It just seems like there's these blockages, and it seems to be at a political level.
Right, it is.
Sure,
I'd be glad to fill you in on that. In 2005, there was pieces of legislation came up called H.R. 810. That's 810. And this was to release the date line. See, we already have approved federal funding by President Bush for some of these blastocystic stem cells. However, the date that these cells can be used requires that the cells have been created August 2001 or prior to August 2001. Well, since then, so you see, we already have some federal funding for it.
Okay.
This piece of legislation was just to extend the date so that we could use some newer cell lines, some cell lines that were not contaminated with mouse feeders, some cells that have been created under a newer process that has given them much more flexibility and much more usability and much easier sustain in the cryopreserve process through the newer methods. And the scientists would like to get a hold of those newer lines. And the legislation that Bush vetoed in 2006 and again in 2007 was simply to change the date of creation of these cells. So we already have NIH-approved cell lines. They're just inferior. Many of the cell lines are inferior, and they don't represent a very diverse group of the population. Because of genetics and DNA, we have a wide variety of different types of people that we are working with, different races and different genetic codings, different family backgrounds as far as disease and illness. So you want to have cell lines that can accommodate more of the population and to be able to help more people because of the diversity of the cell as well as the ease of working with those cells. So the legislation, I mean, it's not like Bush is totally opposed to the blastocystic stem cell research or funds for this research. It's just the date. He's not being flexible on the date, which is sad because, like I said, these newer cells would be much more beneficial.
Why do you think he is? What's above the date?
I think that he has since then been very heavily advised against doing so because of the debate of the controversy and the moral component, the ethics of the research, because prior to that, I don't think we had so much opposition, and Bush was still new in his term, in the first term when this was passed in 2001. So he probably was still trying to maybe be the popular man on both sides of the fence and to please more of the population. But since then, he has really narrowed down in accommodating the wishes and desires of a smaller minority of the population, and that being those who are in opposition to the stem cell research. So I think that there's got to be some kind of, since many of these oppositions are supported by people who are in right-wing conservative and neoconservative groups, and even the Pope himself, who is totally against the research, I think that they've gotten to him, that they've done, you know, for some reason or another, this small minority of people are very powerful and very vocal and have a lot of political sway over the decision that the president has made. He's decided to stand with them rather than the 72% of the constituents who are in favor of blastocystic stem cell research and the funding for it.
So it sounds like if more people were aware
mm-hmm.
of the benefits of this research and that, you know, we are actually not manipulating life, or we're not, you know, we're not terminating life. If there was a majority that were aware of what was going on, then maybe the small majority of people who were opposing it may not be so powerful.
Exactly, and that is my hope and prayer behind my book, is to get that kind of educational component out there, allow people to make their own decisions, and then follow their inner guidance to see what type of activist opportunity they may create or find themselves involved in order to help push for legislation to relax that date of creation. Hopefully that's what my book is going to do, is create that type of awareness through education and allowing people to take their own action.
Well, everything in the end is through education. We're only going to grow by people like you willing to go against the grain.
You may not be old enough to remember, but thinking back as to when technology really started booming, the radio came out, people were against that. That was one of the worst things that had come out, and people were really opposed to that. It was new technology. Then you had the TV come out, and that's a one-eyed monster, son of the devil. And people were just, you know, going off on it. And then you got the Internet, and that's going to be the fall of the human race because of all the pornography and everything out there. They were refusing to see it for the tool that it is. And now if you look back on those same people who were opposing radio, TV, or Internet in its early stages, are now, they all want their own radio show. They want to be on the TV. They have their own website. So you have to see, maybe it's just a fear factor of not knowing. You've got something new coming on the scene, and you don't understand it. Therefore, we tend to shy away from or to sometimes oppose through our own ignorance.
Well,
opposing
and that's human
things
nature.
That could actually be a blessing.
Yeah, and that's human nature too.
I mean,
we
mm-hmm.
all,
I think
most
so.
Of us, yeah, we resist
Absolutely.
Change. Yeah, because we don't. When you don't know what's, when you don't know, then you, the natural option is to protect yourself.
Exactly.
But until you have some personal relationship with something like this, then you know, it really, really almost doesn't affect you. So
right.
Why did you, like, what motivated you to get involved with this? Because your first book wasn't about, it didn't seem to have this type of theme to it.
Right. The first book was about death and dying and comforting people who were losing loved ones or who were facing death themselves. And this was like, instead of having to face the death issue, it was more like I wanted to do the educational component, because once I found out about stem cell research and understood it, I thought, this is such a wonderful gift. The potential that is there should be discovered. We should go for it and try to just learn all we can from this and to make a better life for everyone here on the planet. And I thought, well, the best thing for me to do then is to try to educate people, because like you said, in the end, people who are educated can make an informed decision and feel good about what they're doing without having a conscience that maybe what I'm doing is wrong or whatever. But once you understand the biology behind it, I think people will embrace the technology. It'll just be a matter of time. And probably when we get past this presidential election in 2008 and we get a new person on the scene in the White House, I'm thinking that probably that person is going to be more open-minded. We'll quickly release the date, and we will see some immediate jump in the progress once those funds from NIH are available to scientific researchers, which is a good thing for us, not just medically, but for us economically as well. Right now, because America is so closed-minded to the research in using blastocyst cells, other countries around the world are pulling some of our best scientists out from the U.S. to work in other nations to help develop the technology there rather than here at home where the revenues could be generated for our own economy. So I think it's sad that we are missing the economic opportunity as well as whatever medical benefits might come from it.
You know, well, I wasn't aware of that either, but, you know, listening to you now, I mean, it would be just a matter of logistics, of course, if you're going to want to move forward and you're going to have to just move to another country to do it.
Right.
So thank you for giving us a broader view of the subject. But I have a couple other questions.
Okay.
Where did the motivation specifically come from? Did it come from the research that you did with your first book? It was called Death and Dying?
Uh-huh. More Than Meets the Eye.
More Than Meets the Eye. I've read that. I really like that book.
Right. Well, this book actually came because I had two clients that I was working with. One had a son who was in a stage 4 coma after being struck by lightning 20 years ago. And this man has done all kinds of research on stem cells of all types. Another client is a spinal cord victim. He had an accident when he was 13 years old that left him completely paralyzed from the neck down. He's quadriplegic. And he mentioned to me also about the same time that Dan mentioned his son to me. And it was also at the same time that President Bush was vetoing the H.R. 810. And I thought, this is just not right. Something's not right. I've got two friends who are telling me they could possibly be helped by some technology or treatment that would come from the research. And we have a president who's trying to block that. Where's the logic in that? There's got to be more to this than meets the eye. So that's when I started doing the research, mainly out of my own curiosity and to possibly find out what I could do to help my friends. And from there, it was one of those inner guidance things where I just knew it was going to be the right thing to do to help educate people. It's not like I want the controversy, and I'm not inviting it. There's enough of that already. But I just felt like I needed to take action and that I was following inner guidance in order to write the book just to help people be aware, to help them learn a little more about it, because I've probably put about 600 hours of writing, editing, researching, interviews, and what have you. The typical person doesn't have that kind of time to do the research on any topic, but they might enjoy reading, sitting down for a couple of hours and reading a book from someone who has done the research. It just made good sense to me.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I think it's fascinating. The motivation, though, I think is what's important for us to know, because
mm-hmm.
what we need it to be personal,
mm-hmm.
because it's always about, if it's
right.
about somebody else, then you don't, it doesn't touch you, and then
right.
you really have to get that, like, core,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, LaVon's not on the phone right now, but she has a client who is paralyzed from the neck
mm-hmm.
down, and the family is just going through so much trauma, you know,
mm-hmm.
The life is not over, but it's going to be a challenge if you're
oh, yeah.
paralyzed, and
yeah.
you know, just the financial difficulties that
mm-hmm.
these families are having to take care of their children or their loved
yeah.
ones for the rest of their lives. These people are now dependent for the rest of their lives on somebody else. So this is
right.
you know, this research can also give independence back.
Sure, give people their lives back.
give people get their lives back. Yeah,
yeah, that's why it's so important that we at least research it, explore it. I mean, if nothing comes of it, at least we know that we weren't missing an opportunity. And I just really, really believe that some miracles will become of it, because I'm basing that on what we've already done with adult stem cells that don't have the same potential or the same characteristics with plasticity, with totipotent, with pluripotent. And those are all scientific terms that probably don't mean a lot to people, but it means a whole lot to researchers who understand the abilities of adult stem cells and the abilities or potential abilities that they're seeing and working with the blastocystic stem cells. They know that there's got to be some potential, some lessons, some things that we can utilize, even if it's just a medication or a treatment or something that we can use technology-wise to help people. I mean, even if it's not a cure, if it's some benefit that restores even some motion to someone who is quadriplegic, if they just got some use of their body back, that would be an extreme blessing. And I think what people are failing to realize is that until we do the research, we really don't know what the potential is. But I think we owe it to those who are suffering to give them a right to recover. That's why I named the book that, because I felt like they at least had the right to know if whether or not there was a treatment available for them, and to not be denied that privilege by legislation or a small minority of people who were living in fear and not really understanding what was going on scientifically.
Well, you need the passion in order to do this, because first off, it's not an easy topic. You're going to have there are going to be a lot of people who are going to oppose you on this,
mm-hmm.
and then when you delve into spirituality and religion, that's a real fine line.
Right.
So you do need the passion in order to be successful. It sounds like a mission.
Mm-hmm.
A mission to, it looks like you're an advocate for those who don't have the time and the energy and the resources to research and fight this. And I think that it's a necessary battle, because it's only going to get more difficult. There's always going to be some type of disease, something that we don't know how to find a cure for or to heal. And if this is a door
mm-hmm.
to a new way of dealing with the human body and
Absolutely.
The consciousness, then we do really need to open it up and find out. We owe it to ourselves to walk down that path and find out what can we do for ourselves. Like, we're evolving.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that we're here to evolve. The soul is here to evolve. And my healing is based on the fact that the soul is here to evolve, know itself as one with all that is, or the divine spirit, or some people call it God or pure consciousness. But it's an evolutionary process, and we can see that in time.
Mm-hmm.
You were talking about how people oppose the radio and the television.
Mm-hmm.
But it's as an evolutionary process, the soul itself is evolving, and we're becoming more aware as an actual set of beings. We're becoming more aware that within our bodies, our own bodies, there is a power to heal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessarily even channeling energy. You know, I channel energy. It's from within the body
mm-hmm.
itself.
Right.
So on an evolutionary level, I think we have to start moving forward with our thinking just so that the species can move forward. It's really about success.
Mm-hmm.
Success for humanity. And if we're not able to heal ourselves, and although it might be a minority of people who are dealing with these types of painful issues, if we are not taking care of that part of the society, then we're not evolving.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're not evolving, what are we doing? That's the scary part.
Right.
We do need to, you know, healing is evolving and becoming aware and growing. And expanding, you know, what you're doing is you're expanding the consciousness that's aware of this stem cell. So we really need to heal. It sounds like we need to heal some of those thoughts, those
mm-hmm.
old conditioned thoughts that are passed down from generation to generation.
Right, and without support for a reason, a good logical reason, or even a scientific reason, the opinions that we hold against technology sometimes are very unfounded.
Yes.
But you and I have talked many times, and Sharice, you and I are both planetary healers and believe that we are here for a divine mission, for a purpose that's much higher than what we can actually see on this side of the veil many times. And I believe that this book has that type of divine purpose, not only for healing that mindset that is against something that could have such a potential gift for blessing so many of our loved ones who suffer so many times with illnesses that might have a cure that could be found through the research. So I'm thinking that my husband even this morning reminded me, because I'm about to do a book signing on Tuesday night, and it's going to be a huge event here in Nashville. And I, you know, wake up sometimes and I'm a little fearful. I'm like, what have I gotten myself into? Why did I write a book so controversial? Here I have all of my life hid in a corner and tried to shun anything that looked like an argument because I just hate anything controversial. And here I have written this book. And he looks at me and he says, you know, this is not about you. It's about your divine purpose.
Definitely.
And with that, I'm like, thank you. You just reminded me of why I wrote this book.
Yeah. Some things are greater than just the person.
Right.
You know, sometimes you have to put the personal aside and deal with the masses.
Mm-hmm. And so maybe just overcoming that fear for me is my healing and my evolution for my soul. But hopefully this book will be a healing for the mindset that has kept us in bondage so many times. The fear of things that are unknown, fear of things that we don't understand.
Well, it seems like it's serving a dual purpose. First off, it's educating.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we become more educated. So I'm aware of what this stem cell research is really about, and I wasn't before. I was just relying on what I was hearing on the news.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that the news isn't clear, but they're not going to spend an hour explaining this. They have very little time. So on one level, I am being educated. And then, because I'm being educated and I realized I did not know what this was about, I will think twice about all the other assumptions that I'm making. Because I'm sure this is not the only thing that I have quickly just assumed.
And, well, I think we're all guilty of that.
Yes, yeah, we all are. And that's absolutely only natural. But simply just being on the phone with you today, I am realizing that there's a whole lot of this that I really didn't understand, and now that I'm able to, my whole perception has changed.
Mm-hmm.
So,
very good.
if we could, and this applies to everything. This doesn't mm-hmm. just apply to stem cell. This applies to religion, to spirituality, just to the state of the world today. If our perception is largely based on how much information that we have, so it's really we owe it to ourselves to find out as much as possible about everything so that we have this clear perception. And then on the second level, this book can help push forward that legislation that, you know, you're looking for, so that when we do have a loved one who has leukemia, my grandfather died of leukemia. I mean, it would have been, if things were different, I would have been able to have gotten to know him, but I wasn't able to.
Mm-hmm.
Or the Levon has several clients. She has a lot of clients who are dealing with these types of troubles. That boy, that very young teenager that she's dealing with, he might actually in this lifetime have an opportunity to walk again.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
Yeah, on a personal level. Yeah, how many people out there are disabled? How many people out there can't walk? How many people out there are dealing with all these radiation and chemotherapy? Most of, when I first started healing, maybe about 10 years ago, most of the practice were cancer patients. That's difficult. I saw some suffering there, real suffering. I felt so torn just seeing how much physical pain they were in. And if you're telling me that there's something that we can do to ease this pain, then I think that, you know, let's do it. We got to do it. We can't be afraid of what might be.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to go forward, and everybody knows somebody who's had cancer.
Yeah,
that, you know, that is that. There's so many people that I know, and I think that if we can think, just if everybody could just think right now of who do you know that you care about, even if it's your coworker's aunt or mother or father or brother or sister that has this disease. And if you've seen how they've suffered, how are we going to help these people? Because we're helping ourselves. We're all connected. How are we going to help these people? Like, actually, that's a question. How are we going to help these people? How do people, the lay people like me and Levon, and the people listening, what do we do? How do we help? What do we do to help these people? So you've written this book. What are some suggestions?
First of all, I think what you hit on is very poignant, that whatever we are afraid of or don't understand, let's get some knowledge on it. Let's apply some knowledge. Let's do a little research. Let's read a book or whatever we need to do so that we don't have the fear of the unknown standing in our way. And then second of all is don't jump to conclusions just because somebody else says that this is so, whether it's a religious philosophy or it's revolving around stem cell research. Find out why you believe what you believe. In the book, I include an entire chapter on the history of religion and how it came to play such a part in the politics of any nation. I traced it all the way back to Constantine's days and just showed how passed down thoughts, dogma, doctrine through generation has caused people to not embrace the gifts that God or Goddess or all that is has given us. And to, second of all, to help, if you know somebody who could benefit by reading the book, to let them know about the book. If you have your legislators' contact information, write them and let them know how you feel about the research and ask them to vote for legislation to allow the date to allow NIH-approved stem cells to be used after the date of August 3rd, 2001. Just mainly just awareness and making sure that whenever you make a decision on something that is truly coming from your heart and from knowledge and not just from what someone else says.
Absolutely. I think that is the most important thing that I think our souls here on Earth are here to even know. Is that self-awareness, that thinking for yourself, that examining your thoughts. So I know we have three more minutes left, if I'm not mistaken. So I just want to get out your information, Yvonne, your website, and you know, how do people buy your book?
Yeah, well, the book is available online in any of the online bookstores, such as Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble. It's also available on NightingalePress.com. That is my publisher. If you ask for it in bookstores, they can order it for you because it is distributed through Ingram. And we have also on the website, let me let you know about www.righttorecover, that's R-I-G-H-T, the number 2, recover.com. Tons of information about stem cell research, about the book, about legislation, who's doing what in the field of scientific research in this regard. So that in itself, if you just wanted to, even if you didn't, if you thought you couldn't afford the book or didn't have the ability to get a hold of it, go out to the website and just read around and discover what I've discovered and then make your own decision about the research.
Well, thank you. And I know you have a blog, too.
Mm-hmm. It's the same. The blog is the website. It's righttorecover.com.
Okay. So, because I know that I have been able to, just so people know, you can comment on your blog.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, you can. I've left a couple of comments because I.
Uh-huh.
What happens is, you know, through the commenting, then, you know, and I know sometimes you respond, but there is a lot of people who actually comment on your
uh-huh.
blog. And it's interesting
the
different types of people who are, you know, a lot of doctors, you know, just regular people who, lay people who aren't normally involved in this kind of thing. So I'm really glad that you do have that blog out there. And, you know, another thing that's come up in the last 2 minutes we have left, we can change just through this becoming more conscious. So I'm an energy worker, so I really believe in this energy. So I have become more aware of this, and you have become more aware of this. And just energetically, we are going to raise the consciousness of everything around us. That's just physics, you know, the
mm-hmm.
sympathetic resonance that I wrote about that in my book, Knowing Spirits
right.
for Healing the Soul, which you edited. Thank you very much. We touch each other through our thoughts, up to our vibrations and our frequencies. So if you and I have now raised our consciousness about this issue, then people who are listening to this will have that opportunity, and then the rest of the planet. So our intent is what is creating our reality. So if we are using our intent to not rely on dogmas and to think for ourselves, and also if we put out that intent to change legislation, it will have to be changed.
Mm-hmm.
If enough people, if enough people use their mind, the mind is what is creating the reality anyways. Mm-hmm. So if enough people use their minds and put out their intent and visualize and manifest that this legislation will change, it will change. Especially if those of a higher, those of a more expanded consciousness have the power to manifest a little bit quicker too. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't have to be a 50-year cycle that we have to go through. I actually think it could happen rather quickly. And I know it took a long time for you to get this book done, but I do believe that the results could be quite fast. And that's wonderful.
That's
wonderful. So thank you again, Yvonne. You're the author of Right to Recover. Thank you for joining us and just educating my audience and myself about this subject. And my name again is Reverend Shree Thorne. And my book is called Knowing Spirit Through Healing Your Soul, which Yvonne has edited. And it's not about stem cell research, but about becoming aware and thinking for yourself. And LaVon, my co-host, who gave us an opportunity to take callers if we didn't get a chance to, but LaVon is the founder of the Center of Love out in Skyme, Minnesota. And let me just give out her number. It's 1-218-425-3983, and she does trauma release and a lot of other healing modalities. And now that she's listening to this, if anybody wants to call her and talk about this further, they're more than welcome to. So thanks again, everyone, for joining us, and thank you, Yvonne.
Thank you, Sheree. Blessings.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Knowing Spirit, a show about healing the soul so you can change your life. Please visit our website at www.knowingspirit.org. And if you would like to be a guest on our program or book a private consultation with Reverend Shree Thorne, please call us at 1-815-483-1141. Until then, this is Reverend Shree sending you light and love on your journey home.